This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Michael Monks. Teenagers are vaping in growing numbers. Is it a problem? And if so, what should be done about it? We'll explore that issue with a panel and your phone calls and comments coming up. But first, another issue facing a younger American generation. The first wave of millennials entered the workforce at the height of the Great Recession. And now, even in a recovered economy, many millennials are struggling to get a solid grasp of their finances with stagnant wages and crippling student loan debt. So let's discuss The Millennial Money Makeover. It's the new book by Connor Richardson, who operates a website by the same name. He joins us on the phone. Welcome, Connor.
Hey, great to be here. Thank you for having me.
Absolutely. And in the studio today is Wells Fargo financial advisor Chris DeSimio. Welcome back, Chris.
It is a pleasure to be here, Michael.
Glad to hear that. Listeners are reminded that the information provided on this show is general in nature and may not apply to your personal investment situation. Hey, if you've got a question about millennials and money or you want to weigh in on the matter, give us a call, 513-419-7100. You can also email talk@WVXU.org or find us on Facebook or Twitter. We'll look for your comments and your tweets there. So, Connor, in your book, The Millennial Money Makeover, you cite as half of millennials as being, quote, freaked out by their finances. And so you created this as a method for addressing that. And financial challenges have faced all generations in one form or another. What's unique about the millennial situation?
Well, Michael, that's a great question. Yeah, 52% of millennials are unhappy about their financial situation. And what's a little bit unique about millennials is that they entered into the working world in, you know, a tumultuous time, and they're also saddled with some of the highest student loan debt that previous generations didn't typically see. So they also have these sort of stagnant incomes right now. So you have stagnant incomes combined with higher levels of debt, which has produced this high level of financial anxiety that millennials feel on a daily basis.
So we're going to get into some of the suggestions that you make, Connor. But first, just for the sake of the audience and me and Chris, what is a millennial? I see a lot of different ranges for this, but what do you classify it as in your book?
Right. There are certainly different definitions depending on who you ask, but it's typically people who are born in the late 1970s all the way up to the mid-1990s. So it's a, you know, 75+ million people in the United States.
That's what I usually tell anybody who asks, is that I'm either a baby Gen Xer or a papaw millennial. So it's tough being on the cusp. You're seeing a lot of different perspectives. And Chris, you're here with us today, and you read Connor's book recently.
I have.
And what did you think of it?
Well, I love it. Connor, great job. As a baby boomer, I guess that makes me old now, doesn't it? It's amazing. The baby boom had been the biggest generation, and now the millennial generation is even bigger. And this was on the cover story of Barron's not long ago. So it's a big issue. And as Michael said, there are a lot of different problems that kind of plague millennials that may not have overly burdened the baby boom generation. Connor, in your book, now you as an accountant, as a CPA from, you know, you went to school at Georgia and then a graduate degree at Villanova. Sorry again about the basketball game yesterday. you talk about this study from the George Washington University School of Business, and I thought the numbers were shocking about millennials. Would you mind reviewing these? I mean, I just have trouble. 76% of millennials are financially illiterate?
Yes, that's absolutely right. And it is shocking. And I think one of the reasons for that is because money has become taboo in our culture. And a lot of this has to do with just education and where we are in life. But yes, so there is a study from George Washington University, and the numbers are pretty stark. And that's where I get, you know, 66% of millennials are financially illiterate, 64% don't have a retirement account. So there's a lot of work to do in terms of educating. And some of this has to do with really where millennials are in their life stage. But there's a lot of work to do in terms of education here.
But what does that mean to be financially illiterate?
Right. So in that study, what they did was they asked a series of questions, and it was dependent upon the percentage of answers that respondents got right. And really what it boils down to is that they didn't have a very good base of financial terminology. And what they also found in the study, which is actually equally as important, is that responders were actually overconfident in their ability to answer questions correctly. So millennials are overconfident in something that they don't know much about.
That's not unusual, I suppose. Yeah. And Chris, let me ask you, because in your line of work at Wells Fargo, are you seeing any significant number of millennials seeking out professional financial advice, or is there a decrease in the number of people coming out to your industry?
Well, I might not be in a good position that, because when people call us, it's because they're interested. So we rarely see people who aren't interested, because if someone is making a call, it's usually the, you know, someone who's the, you know, a grandchild or a child of one of our clients. But there also are some millennials who are just looking around and looking around for help, and they don't know where to go. And this is what is great about Connor's book, because it talks about that getting unstuck. You know, there's a sense that a lot of people have, even non-millennials, even we baby boomers and beyond, that there's so much information out there that it can be overwhelming, because you just don't want to make a mistake. And that's one of the points that Connor addresses in this book, is that there's no really, it's more important that you actually do invest and do something than be this, the proverbial deer in the headlights and do nothing.
513-419-7100 if you'd like to weigh in on this conversation, or email talk@wvxu.org, or find us on Facebook or Twitter. Let's talk about student loan debt, because I know this plays a huge role in the financial situation of millennials. Last June, Forbes called student loan debt in America a $1.5 trillion crisis. One key piece from that article by Zach Friedman said, student loan debt is now the second highest consumer debt category, behind only mortgage debt. It's higher than credit cards. It's higher than car loans. More than 44 million borrowers owe $1.5 trillion in student loan debt. The average student in the class of 2016 owes more than $37,000. So, Connor, you address this issue in Chapter 2 of the Millennial Money Makeover. How important is it for students to get a handle on that specific debt?
Well, it is absolutely instrumental in getting your finances in order. And a lot of people don't want to address it when they come out of college or grad school and they've acquired this, what seems to be astronomical amount of student loan debt. But what I tell people quite often is that just because you have long-term debt doesn't equate to long-term payments. So the quicker you can tackle this student loan debt and get it out of your life, the quicker you can move on to actually accumulating an emergency fund and beginning to invest. And that's where people tend to want to start that off the bat, but before they pay off their student loans. So it's critical to get it out of your life as soon as you can.
So when people find themselves in a newer entry-level position, or they're not making the type of salary that they need to afford all of their rent, their regular living items on top of the student loan payments, so maybe they're deferring, maybe they're making interest-only payments, how do you advise them on prioritizing that particular debt ahead of anything else?
So in terms of priority, I tell people that they should, if they have student loan debt, that's okay. If they have credit card debt, they need to focus on getting rid of that first, and then they can progress to getting rid of their student loans. And because student loans are typically higher in nominal value, people need to take a little bit more drastic action. So that might mean moving back in with your parents if you're a millennial, or you know, trying to get into some sort of buddy system with people who have student loan debt. So you know, your cohort can be your friends. And because there's a lot of people experiencing this, cognitive dissonance between what they want to do versus the reality of their financial situation, it's awesome to team up with a buddy and try to tackle this together, whether that's a spouse or significant other. And then really think about what you want out of life and how your budget fits into you paying off those student loans.
But it sounds like student loan needs to go to the front of the line.
Absolutely.
And Chris, you're a financial advisor. Is that something you would suggest as well?
Well, I totally agree with Connor's point. I mean, if you look at the cost of money, the highest cost debt that most people have is a credit card debt. And if Ben Franklin were alive today, he would kind of tweak the old a penny saved is a penny earned. He would say a penny saved is better than a penny earned, because you don't pay taxes on the penny that you save. A long time ago, debt on credit cards, interest that you pay on credit cards, used to be deductible. it no longer is. For some people, maybe Connor as a CPA can help us clarify this, but in many cases, interest on student loan payments is not deductible if you make too much money.
So
you have to look at the net cost of carrying that debt. But clearly, in almost every case, addressing the credit card monster first and cutting it down to size is probably the very first thing someone should do. Because if you cannot pay 13% interest, which is what Connor points out as the average card rate, it's the same thing as earning 13% interest. And it's guaranteed. When you pay it off, there's no risk in that. And so there's no such thing as a guaranteed 13% anywhere, not in the stock market, nowhere. And so it's a smart thing to do first. But then, and I'd like to have Connor help us develop this a little bit. How does someone find a balance then between saving and investing and starting 401k plans and figuring out how to juggle that against credit card debt and student loan debt?
And we'll pick that up in just a moment. We're listening to Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU, and our conversation about the millennial money makeover will continue right after this short break. Thanks for listening to Cincinnati Edition On Demand. Did you know you can have the show delivered straight to your smartphone every day? Just go to your favorite podcast listening app, search Cincinnati Edition, and subscribe. You'll be able to keep up with all our great conversations with newsmakers, public officials, and other interesting people from the greater Cincinnati region and beyond on the go, anytime, anywhere. It's great for those days you can't tune in to catch us live. Weekdays at noon on 91.7 WVXU. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Michael Monks. Millennials are trying to recover financially after entering the workforce at the height of the Great Recession. As they battle stagnant wages and a desperate student loan burden, we discuss the Millennial Money Makeover. It's the title of a new book by Connor Richardson, who operates a website of the same name. He joins us on the phone and in the studio, as well as Fargo financial advisor Chris DeSimio. A reminder that the information provided on today's show is general in nature and may not apply to your personal investment situation. We were just about to start talking about credit cards when we took our little break there, and I read an article posted at NerdWallet last December. It indicated that millennials use credit cards as frequently as previous generations, with the difference being that this generation uses fewer cards and puts more research into choosing one. Connor, what do we know about millennials and credit card use?
Well, so the study is exactly right. And typically, they have a couple different credit cards. They'll put in a little bit more research. And really, in the book, I recommend that you actually don't have any credit cards. And if you have to use credit cards, that you're really only using one. Because as you know, it sort of makes sense intuitively. As you have multiple, it makes it very difficult to keep track of your accounts when payments are due. And you also have a propensity to overspend when you can't manage everything in one place.
And Chris, I think you were just about to ask a question along those lines, is how you balance payments between credit cards and student loans.
Sure. So, Connor, let's suppose that a millennial or even a non-millennial has $100 left over at the end of the month. How should they divvy up that extra money among the various things calling for its attention? Is there a certain percentage you would propose or suggest that they put towards the credit card first and then towards the student loan? And what about if their employer will match their contribution to a 401k? Should they be waiving off free money from their employer to pay off this debt?
Yeah, so that's a great question, Chris. And it sort of goes back to your point earlier in the show. People are inundated with financial advice all the time. And what I try to do in Millennial Money Makeover is distill things down into very binary steps for people to follow, because it eliminates this paradox of choice that people feel. So if you have $100 left over at the end of the month, I would ask the question, you know, what are you prioritizing? And if you're following the book and you have credit card debt, student loans, and you maybe want to save, I would say let's be very binary in our approach and very specific about what we want to accomplish with that $100. And let's do it in incremental steps. So if you have credit card debt, let's take that $100 and explicitly focus on trying to get that down to zero. Once you have that down to zero, then you can move on to student loans, and then you can begin saving. And Chris, that critical question on the 401k match, I go against the grain a little bit in this, but I actually advocate that you don't focus on the match at all. And although it seems like free money, it actually comes at an opportunity cost of getting rid of student loan or credit card debt if you have it.
513-419-7100 if you'd like to weigh in. Let's go to the phones. We've got Jerry on the line. What's your question, Jerry?
Yes, I have two millennials, and one is trying to pay off his student loan. And I think there are two aspects to this whole issue. One is input and one is output. And one is trying very hard to reduce his student loan. But the main cause for both of them seems to be the input. They're not getting the money they need in the job that they have. In other words, the minimum wage is not sufficient as a living wage. So I'd like to hear response to that. Thank you.
Thanks for your call, Jerry. Appreciate that. So it sounds like this isn't an unusual circumstance that Jerry's two millennial kids are facing. It's that they understand the challenges and the need to pay off student loan debt, but their salaries that they've earned, I guess even with their college education qualifying for these positions, it's not enough.
Right. It frequently doesn't leave much money left over at the end of the month. And I think that's the point that Connor was making. Sometimes you have to make hard decisions. And in Connor's book, The Millennial Money Makeover, Connor, jump in. You talked about you had the good life. You were in New York, where you always wanted to be. It's a lot of fun to be in New York. There are a lot of things to do. You were making good money, but then you realized that you weren't happy because something was wrong. You weren't where you thought you should be, and then you had to make some hard choices yourself.
That's right, Chris. Yeah, what I call in the book a financial awakening, and that's this moment where you sort of have clarity and you wake up to the fact that I was living this life, but I wasn't necessarily addressing all of the things that I wanted to financially. And so I made the difficult decision to move from a city I loved, New York City, to Austin, Texas, which was an unknown to me. But it turns out Austin's a wonderful place to live. But in that move, I was able to reduce my fixed costs, my monthly rent and various other variable costs in my life, down by over 50%. So to Jerry's point on the call, the easiest thing to do is to contract your fixed costs. If you can control those and keep those down low, then you can work on increasing your income and those inputs as you know you progress as a millennial. And you might not be at the right job, and you may need to sit down and put pen to paper and say, does this make sense for me to do right now? And maybe it's something I need to leave.
So it sounds like if these folks are dealing with a salary that does not accommodate all their expenses, particularly when it comes to student loan debt,
right,
the best point of action is to make more money somewhere?
Correct. And so let's say you went to a liberal arts school and maybe you love being an artist and that's the career path you've chosen, but you have substantial student loans. Well, I would sit down with you and I would say, okay, I want you to paint and do these things you love as your passion on the side, and then let's go get a more high-paying job for a little while until you actually get everything in your life under control and get the debt out of your life, and then you can go back to doing that job that maybe is not as paying you as much, but you need to make that hard choice and a sacrifice until you can get to that point.
Because if you don't do it now, you may become a burden on the baby boomers.
Well, the baby
right.
boomers are going to become a burden on the millennials.
Who are already
certainly.
There, right. So it's a race to the bottom.
Yeah, I mean, it seems at some point perhaps the cost of college and the way we do student loans in this country is something worth exploring here, because if people are graduating from college with the education and in the field that they want to be in, and they're not able to pay back the money that got them that job in the first place, something in the system appears to be broken. Okay, let's talk about cash. We're increasingly cashless in society. I've got four wrinkly $1 bills in my pocket right now. I don't even know where they came from. They've been there for days. But would you say that cash is still an important way to control spending and attract spending? How do we reconcile that with this move to cashless transactions?
Yeah, that's a great question. So I recommend, I say in my book that cash is forever king, and it's an amazing form of currency to mitigate overspending. So the reason credit card companies exist and that they proliferate in your wallet is because they reduce the pain of the transaction. Take out my credit card, I swipe it, and then I feel the pain of the purchase later. What makes cash awesome is that when you have to pull out that money and hand it to somebody, the pain of the transaction is at the beginning of the transaction, not at the end. So if you want to stymie overspending, using cash regularly is a great way to do that.
Chris is pointing at a chart in your book here. There's something I think he wants to point out.
Connor, in your book, you talk about very specific thoughts on how much cash someone should have, and you talk about it as a coverage ratio. In other words, how much time can someone cover their expenses with cash?
Right.
And you have six different levels. We can just talk about the first five because this is public radio.
Sure. So in the book, I kind of lay out how much cash you need to have on hand. And really, the beginning of that is creating an emergency fund. And that's, $3,000 is my recommended amount so that you can take care of emergencies should they arise and when they arise, really. And then what Chris is referring to is this coverage ratio of having enough cash on hand to be able to cover your monthly fixed costs. So the first stage of that is really trying to have 1 to 3 months, and then you're sort of building up this slush fund. And then you can, in the book I reference, having optionality later down the road where you have enough cash to where maybe you could last a year, 2 or 3 years. But what that does is it gives you optionality in life. So for example, if you're working at that job that you don't necessarily love, have enough cash to survive for a year, maybe you take a little time off and try to find the job that makes you a little bit happier.
All right, let's go back to the phones. We've got David on the line. What's your question, David?
So, yeah, actually, you were just talking about going to working those hard jobs for a year or so. I've been working in the trades for the last...
Have we lost David? Sounds like we've lost David, but it sounds like his question, as transcribed by our producer, Pete Reitmeier, was basically he's asking, is college still worth it?
That's an interesting question. If you watch This Old House, for example, which I can mention because it's another public broadcasting, but they've been putting a lot of emphasis on people learning the trades as a way to not incur huge amounts of student debt. And if you've tried to hire a carpenter or a plumber or an electrician lately, you realize that there's a huge amount of demand and a shortage of skilled people. And a lot of people finish these trade schools with a job that's highly sought after, and they can make fairly good money. It might not be as some people don't think it's very fashionable, but it's a hot field right now. And I think this is what Connor was talking about, is that sometimes you can do something that pays the bills while you can afford to do something that you really want to do, that to satisfy the satisfy your muse.
And in our final seconds, Connor, I'd like you to weigh in on that as well. I mean, is college still worth it? You kind of hinted at this moments ago when you suggested that some people should consider finding a higher paying job outside of their interest.
Right. We've all been sold the bill of goods that going to college is the ticket to success, and that's not necessarily the case anymore. And in my book, I advocate for a couple of different experiences. One is the dirty experience, and that's doing a trade or something like that, but that maybe is a little bit not as sexy as a college degree, but you can make a terrific living in this country still.
And it's cheaper to go to community college as well. All right, let's thank Millennial Money Makeover author Connor Richardson. Thanks for joining us on the phone, Connor. And also Wells Fargo financial advisor and our friend Chris DeSimio. Thanks for being here today.
You're very welcome.
Great chat. Up next, a look at the growth in teens who vape. Is it a problem? What should be done? You're listening to Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. You've been listening to Cincinnati Edition. The producer for today's show is Pete Reitmeier. The assistant producer is Selena Reeder. The technical director is Josh Elstrow. I'm Michael Monks. Subscribe to our podcast at WVXU.org.
Thank you.